This is the Tech Talk for Accountants show with your host, Andrew Lassise, where every week we have a new guest to discuss the latest technology, apps, tips, and tricks to help you improve your accounting firm. This episode is brought to you by Tech for Accountants, an IT firm that specializes in cybersecurity for the small accounting firm. Many of our clients used to work at big firms that had all this crazy security and then went to work for themselves. And while they knew it was important to have great IT security, they just have too many other things to worry about and don't have enough time to actually learn this stuff. What we do is help bridge the gap so that even small accounting firms have great security at a fraction of the cost of doing it themselves, and it's all done for you. We offer listeners to the show a complimentary IT audit and consultation. Just go to tech4accountants.net/podcast. And you can book a free IT audit. Again, that's tech4accountants.net/podcast. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Tech Talk for Accountants show. I'm your host, Andrew Lassise with Tech for Accountants IT, specializing in the accounting industry. And with us today, my good friend, Rory Henry. He's the director at Arrowroot Family Office. He's a CFP and behavioral financial advisor, co-founder of AFO Wealth Management Forward, which helps accountants integrate holistic wealth management strategies into their firm with proactive planning. He has an awesome podcast that I was just a guest on. So, and we had some fun.
We did. This is back to back. I'm going to do this more with just other podcasters. This back to back is quite entertaining.
We're just going to say that if you check it out, there's a Donald Trump rap somewhere in there. There is. That's all I'm going to say.
Andrew gives a Donald Trump rap to a diving NASDAQ.
It was quite the show. So he has a podcast and he's interviewed great thought leaders like myself in the accounting space. I'm just a blip on the radar, but also major publications like the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Accounting Today, and CPA Trendlines. So quite the resume you have there, Rory. Jeez. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, buddy. Making me feel good.
Yeah. The intros are always like they pump you up, right?
They do.
It's like I have done a couple cool things, right? In my life.
I wish every time I walked into a room they would have that intro.
What you need to do is just have it like on like a laminated piece of paper, and just like whenever you walk into the room, just hand it to people and they'll be like, "What'd you hand me?" And it's just like, "This is what I do." And it's like,
instead of a business card, just have that paragraph.
I don't really do the whole, you know what though? I don't have them with me, but Mike McAllowitz, he has a really good book called Get Different. And one of the strategies that we use in marketing is that they're annoying, for lack of better words. I have these annoying business cards that don't fit anywhere and they're thick and people will not throw them away because it's like, oh, I feel bad throwing this away. So, and I mean, it costs like 10 times more than a regular one, but people don't throw it away. So, you know, how much value do you get from that? I'll be on a Zoom call with people and be like, look, I still got it.
I still got the card. So I used to go to the bank once a month and get $200 worth of $2 bills. And I would hand them out to people. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, Rory, I still have that $2 bill you gave me. Right? It's very memorable. Yeah.
Yeah. So being memorable is always, and I think that's really where, you know, the Donald Trump rap, you got to check out Rory's podcast. Really, you know, where things take off. But
I mean, Scott Serrano is going to have a run for his money here when Andrew starts rapping at conferences. You guys should do a rap battle.
We should. If there is somewhere in like a treasured box somewhere, Andrew Lassie's sixth grade rapping, It's All About the Benjamins on stage at Outdoor Ed. I think I slipped in like a swear word and they cut us off, or I was that bad or that good. But I'm not sure where those VCRs are hidden, but I know somewhere in the Patapsco Middle School archive is you could find me fighting Scott. But so
speaking of middle school, Andrew, I had a totally different experience. And it's a reason that I got into improv later in life is because for my seventh grade ASB speech to become the eighth grade president, I was going to do the generic speech, go up there and, you know, pizza parties, TV once a month or twice a month. And my brother, who's a junior in high school, goes, Rory, no, I want you to go up there and sing Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You. So I get on stage, Andrew, and I go, if I, and all of a sudden the kids start booing me and like screaming, you loser. And I, so I just ran off stage. I couldn't speak in public for, for years. So I got, I know, right? So, yeah. So
I thought you were going to tell me you crushed it and became president.
It did not. The kids didn't know the humor. They were too young.
See,
but no, it led
ahead
me
of
to
its time.
Yeah, it was ahead of its time, but it led me down a path eventually to start doing improv, and I'll go on stage in Santa Monica, then throughout LA, to make an absolute fool of myself, and it's so much fun because you become okay with failing, and you just come up with things like raps by Donald Trump, you know, out of the blue. So it's fun.
Yeah, although I mean, credit where credit's due, and we cite it, but the
yes, we have
it was. Sing. It was from ChatGPT, but as so, I mean, I love the topic of improv, and my sister actually lived in LA for several years and was in the improv scene.
Yeah,
out there once upon a time, it's maybe like 15 years ago, and she's not even like, oh, it's my sister, so like she's funny, but like she's good, but now does whatever she. I should know.
You should know what your sister does, Andrew.
I should know.
We saw John Garrett at Bridging the Gap, and his thing is, what's your and? And so the major tenet in improv is saying yes and. So building off the last thing was said, and it translates well to life. You know, going to that event, right? Or taking that meeting, because you never know what the opportunities will come out of. Taking that yes and approach in life. So not only does it allow you to be okay with failing, but allows you to say yes to things and work with people, collaborate, actively listening. That is a key tenet of improv. And then just being playful, and you act like a kid and just make things up, which is fun, but also mortifying when you're on stage and trying to be funny. The key to improv is don't try to be funny. Just work within the scene and work with your teammate to build from there.
All right, so now we're going to have like a hard-hitting segue then.
Okay, what's the segue?
So how do you incorporate improv and open-mindedness and things that are learned from improv into your work scenario with family office or virtual family office, behavioral finance?
Yeah, that's a lot of big words there.
There's a lot of big words there. So yeah. off the cuff, I mean, I feel like everything in life sort of has a connection in one road or another. And I'm curious of your thoughts on the yes and when it comes to business.
Yeah. So I think I'll take a step back, because when I got into improv 7 or 8 years ago now, I went out to build a tax practice management software to rival Canopy. So Canopy was being built at the same time. Carbon was being built overseas. I saw a pain point in the marketplace. I had a tax company. I was running my CRM through Salesforce. And I said, how does the tax profession not have a modern day CRM to manage clients and those relationships? And so I built the minimum viable product, raised money. And that was during that same time that Canopy went through the $77 million in sales and marketing and a failed tax prep software. So I went to the venture community. I said, Rory's a good idea, but your competitor out there just went through a whole big chunk of money. And I was absolutely crushed during that time, because you know, I saw a great opportunity to help accountants become more efficient through an end-to-end solution. What Canopy has now, they've obviously rebounded, as you know, Andrew. And so I was crushed, because I really thought that we can help transform the profession. And that ended up leading me to the family office. And a family office, for those that don't know, people think of Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos. They think of John D. Rockefeller. And a family office, in a sense, people think of it and feel that it's something that is for people who have $100 million or more in investable assets. But really, in the modern family office, or I call a multifamily office or a virtual family office, is really integrating tax, accounting, financial planning, wealth management, insurance, lending, providing for the many needs of the client, bringing in subject matter experts when needed, but really quarterbacking that situation. So I saw what we were doing here at Arrowroot Family Office. I saw the advancements in technology, which we can touch on, that allowed us to provide more future-facing advice and making sure that these professions are working together and collaborating really to provide true holistic advice to that client, making sure their business is growing and also making sure their personal finances are being worked on as well and in collaboration with each other. So long story short, the failed software led me down the pathway to partner with Arrowroot Family Office and see the advancements in technology. And I absolutely love the accounting profession. I think they're uniquely positioned to provide holistic advice to clients, whether you're that hub, that person in the hub handling the situation, or you're a great spoke and making sure you're getting information to that hub. But the person shouldn't be quarterbacking that situation. Someone should be handling the many finances for a family.
Yeah, it's a really cool concept. And, you know, the accountant, when it comes to, especially like a small business owner, you know, quarterbacking their entire finances and being able to know, here is someone that you should talk to about this specific thing. So, right. You know, just for instance, like my own accountant, and I mean, it's super, super under scrutiny now, but like, okay, we qualified and it was real. We got ERC before it was cool and before it was bad.
Before it was bad.
Yeah, it's like LSD in the 60s. It's like, we didn't know what was wrong with it. Like, we just thought we were having fun. But he had said, like, I'm not a specialist in it, but let me get you in touch with these guys. Yeah. And it's funny with ERC, we just got, and I mean, we're talking like a month or two ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, COVID ERC, we applied, it was maybe like April, May, 2020. So around July, 2023,
yeah,
we got like a payroll for one of the quarters. It's like, how is this going to help anybody? You know, yeah. Like PPP and EIDL, it was like, okay, a couple weeks or whatever it was, but ERC, hey, you know, I got it. But I just saw they're stopping all ERC because there's so much fraud. I just read it in Counting Today earlier today. So now tell me about, what is behavioral finance? From the sound of it, I'd think it's sort of how someone, I understand, I'm trying to articulate, but you know, the decisions.
You're on the right track.
The decisions that you make, whether or not they're for better or worse, we'll say like I'd assume like the classic example, it's like, oh, you go and buy Starbucks every day and it's like built in, or am I just way off?
No,
you would know.
Yeah, no.
Yes, and you're wrong.
Yes, and you're totally wrong, Andrew. You know, in the simplest of terms, really, it's traditional finance that takes into account psychology and emotional aspects of financial decision making. We are not rational actors. We are irrational. So we make decisions based on emotion. Think about loss aversion, right? It's being susceptible to losses more so than gains, right? Or mental accounting. When you get that tax refund, you treat that money differently than you do your regular W-2 paycheck. There's an interesting study that was done, a research that was done out of Norway, and they were researching the Norwegian underground. And these criminals were treating their day job money differently than their money they made through illicit work. And so they would buy diapers, they would invest the money they made in W-2, and then they would spend their illicit money on illicit things, drugs, gambling. So it's funny, is that mental accounting. So we all have our biases when it comes to money. And when it comes down to it, it's really our relationship to money, which is formed in our childhood. And I had on a really smart person. Her name's Dr. Christy Archuleta. She is the pioneer when it comes to financial therapy. And she said, Rory, we just don't ask ourselves what money means to us. Like, what does money really mean to you? And so what behavioral finance is, and the big push in financial planning, wealth management, is helping people uncover what money means to them, their relationship to it, and then their values. Because all the research shows that our values shape our goals shape our behaviors, and then in return, our behaviors will then reflect our values. So it's diving deeper and really understanding what matters most to our clients. There's also really good research, Andrew, by Dr. Hal Hirschfield. I had him on the podcast. He has a book called Your Future Self. If you are looking for a new book, I highly recommend it. And he says that we treat our future selves as no different than a stranger. He did some neuroimaging and neuroscience, and he put up pictures of, I think, Matt Damon and Natalie Portman, and he put a picture up of someone's future self, and the same neurons were firing. And so we don't make decisions with that future person in mind. If you think of, let's say, when you're at the supermarket and you're hungry, you don't take in consideration that person a week from now that's not going to be as hungry, right? You start loading up on food. So it's some interesting stuff. It's really, we're in our infancy, I think, when it comes to advising people and understanding their money habits. But I think it's vitally important. And this translates well to accountants, I think, to help their business owners make better decisions when it comes to their business and their personal finances.
Yeah, that's the concept of it. And once upon a time, I had the education requirements for a CFP, and then graduated during the recession, pivoted, did IT. It worked out okay.
You're doing okay, Andrew.
Yeah, but so with my maybe more knowledge than like know enough to be dangerous, and I've worked with several families, just friends and things, of, hey, Andrew, you have a background in finance ish and I trust you, so could you just help me? So talking in like basic budgeting. Yeah. And so, you know, and I'd see a lot of times that people's lives on Facebook and then their like actual finances are not congruent at all. Like one in particular, he's like, I'm drowning. I have $100,000 in debt. Like I can't sleep at night, blah, 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 all this stuff. And then we sit down, we budget, and we're like, look, you know, basically do a P&L for his life and
personal financial statement. Yeah.
And we're like, hey, look, like, you know, you're spending $700 per week on eating out, and you go out to all these like really fancy places. Like maybe, you know, obviously it's like, if you only eat in, then that's going to solve that problem. But your behaviors, you know, you're not the kind of person that's just going to stop it all of a sudden. So maybe we could find a way to carve out and go to less expensive restaurants. So kind of playing into the human psychology of it. Yeah. And so after, I mean, we spent 3-4 hours, and then like the next day, Facebook, getting my new pool put in by Nelson. Nelson's the man. Tag him. It's like hashtag new pool, hashtag blessed. And then he's like, dude, I'm $160,000 in debt. This is crazy. And I'm like, you bought a pool. Why did you buy a pool after we just talked about like not eating at as expensive restaurants? I know I didn't say don't buy a pool, but I thought, but the behaviors. And when you said like people come across, you know, like surprise money or free money, like when you're in debt, that money should be used towards getting you back up.
Yes.
Not, oh, hey, I have some new spending money. It's no, that's picking up pieces. So it's a very, and I'm curious of your thoughts on this. So they don't teach finance at all in school. Thoughts.
Right. So I just actually got back from an accounting conference, wealth management conference. It was, I call it Wealthcella. It was 3,500 people in Huntington Beach outside. It was absolutely insane. And I'd ran into a lady that I partnered with a couple of years ago, and she has a financial literacy app called Goal Setter, and she teaches financial literacy through memes, through GIFs, and through pop culture. So if you have kids, you can give them this app, put their allowance on the app, but before they have the money released to them, they have to pass a 10-question financial literacy quiz. Like, what's a interest rate, right? What's a car loan, right?
Wow. What's this called?
It's called Goal Setter. Tanya Van Kort, she partnered with Kevin Durant, Anthony Anderson, Chris Paul back in the day. So it's a really cool app. But you're right, Andrew. We don't teach kids. I mean, they extended, I believe, the econ program to a year now from 6 months in most states. But we don't teach people the blocking and tackling, those basic financial concepts. I mean, always talk about, like, people have a hard time how to file a tax return, right? Or how to, you know, budget or balance their book. And so we're not teaching them the principles and the foundational work that they need to be successful in life. That's why I believe the accounting professional is uniquely positioned to really help people make better decisions when it comes to money. For the wealth side, we're not incentivized many times until people have assets to manage, right? A high enough income to have real tax savings. But it's those that are in the audience that are dealing with people early on, starting that first business, helping them grow that business. So taking these behavioral finance concepts and then helping people really uncover what matters most to them, doing a vision type mapping situation. Hal Hirschfield's work, he says the antidote to seeing yourself as a stranger in the future is to create a vivid visual picture of that future self, so you can start identifying with them and making choices today that will help out that person of tomorrow. And this translates to eating healthy, working out. If you want to have your grandkids, you want to be able to play around with your grandkids, you know, you're going to eat better, or you're going to start working out because you want to be able to live longer and have a healthy life in retirement. So, you know, that's why I love the accounting profession. I think they're in a great position to really guide people. I always quote Ron Baker, Andrew. He says, we have the ability to advise people from womb to tomb. So when that kid's born, start that 529 plan and then help them start that first business, grow that business, and then hopefully do transition or succession planning, have a liquidity event, manage those assets, have that estate plan, and that can come full circle and you can start advising generations from baby boomers all the way to Gen Z.
I love that. Womb to tomb. I had him on like maybe a year right before his book came out. And I feel like he might have said the womb to tomb line on there. But that's really,
I mean, I owe Ron a lot of money because I probably quote it on my podcast. Ron Baker, I owe you royalties, but I do give you credit.
Hey, when you give credit, you know, you're promoting, and that's really all anyone can ask for, unless they're asking for money. It's all you can ask for. It's not all you can ask for. You can ask for other stuff too. So what are you seeing? I know it's something that you tackle a lot. So talk about what you're seeing as far as private equity, M&A, and private equity and accounting.
Yeah. I mean, I think we saw this at the conference, Alan Colton speaking about it, Matthew May and Michael Lee. I think we're just seeing this influx of capital into the profession. And private equity is known as smart money. So they see the opportunity, and accounting firms provide both a coupon play and a growth play. So it's great recurring revenue, right? And then this ability to grow. I think Eisner Amper has doubled in revenue since that deal happened over 24 months ago. And they went from $625 million to over $1.3 billion. I think the other one doubled as well. Private equity sees the ability to provide more services. Alan Colton said it, for 132 years, the accounting profession had two services, tax returns and financial statements. I wrote an article in CPA Trendlines calling it the financial flywheel. So if you take tax returns, financial statements being the start of that flywheel, you can then start offering financial planning, tax planning, financial planning, wealth management, insurance, exit planning, estate planning, cybersecurity, HR, payroll, you handle that relationship. I mean, I trademarked Advise Roar because I was talking to so many different advisors, tax advisor, business advisor, estate planning advisor, financial advisor. And when I thought about it, we're really serving whatever pain point that client has. So the ROAR stands for return on relationship. And that goes back to that human side of advice, really finding out what that client needs and serving that client, that relationship with your expertise or bringing in another subject matter expert. But it's really that relationship that you shouldn't be a servant to a service. You should service that relationship.
And being able to identify things that are a good fit for your client because you have that relationship with them.
Yeah.
And it's not just fill out this form and this is the plan that you should get because, you know, this algorithm says so. But really understanding your client, what their needs are, and maybe, you know, we learned this, or I learned it early on in my career in IT, is that most people, they don't know how to articulate what is going on and what they need. And so they may be saying something, they're literally saying one thing, but what they're describing is actually another thing. So if we just take everything from someone that doesn't know as much as we do, just off of, so, you know, you're talking with a client, they're like, what I want for my child is a 529. I want a 529 right. because I want guaranteed that their school will be paid for with predictable payments and no fluctuation. I want it to just be the exact same thing and college is paid for. And it's like, you didn't describe a 529 there, yeah. you know, but you know, if they just took it, oh, my client wants a 529, let's get them a 529. And then the client's like, that's not what I want. You said that. And we see in IT, everything that we get when a ticket comes in, it's like, I was hacked.
Yeah.
I have a virus. There's hackers on my computer. And, you know, at first it's just like, oh my gosh, like another person got hacked. And it's like, what you're seeing there is a junk mail. That is junk mail. You just ignore that. that is not a 911 emergency. But you know, people maybe don't have the exact words and terms, but think they do. Or we get people that know enough to be dangerous. And so, like, my mom falls into this category where she'd be like, oh yeah, you know, like, I set up the encryption on my microphone and it's like, that's not a sentence. That's not a word that happens.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Like, keep talking. I'll figure out what you actually meant. So, but being able to translate that for the client, you know, having that relationship and understanding, like, these are key pieces to having that relationship. And, you know, we talk a lot on the show about the trust equity that you build with your client. And when you can describe their pain and the solution to their pain better than they can, the client is going to recognize that you are that trusted advisor, and the likelihood of them commoditizing and leaving, it just drastically gets reduced because you have a great solution to their problem that they probably were not even aware of. And a simple example, when I was first starting my company and my accountant was like, oh, you should set up a SEP IRA and we'll fund it and you'll save $16,000 in taxes. And I'm just like, what? This exists?
Like, you
just waved a wand, opened an account, and that saves $16,000? What?
Yeah. I mean, I just interviewed one of the chief senior strategists at Vanguard, and we talked about this aspect of trust. And they have a 20-year study that shows the value of a financial advisor. And they came to the conclusion, you know, there's caveats there, obviously, but they said you can produce returns, net returns, 3%, actually exceeding 3% by behavioral coaching, by saving them on costs and fees, and by tax efficiency. But then we also went to this study that did, they did on trust, and they said there's three components of the trust they were measuring. They said 17% of people make decisions on functional trust. Like, you can do what you're going to say you do. The other, I believe, 30% was ethical trust. So you're going to act in their best interest. And then, Andrew, the other 53% was emotional trust. And that's really knowing your clients, being empathetic, serving that relationship. Clients don't leave you when they know that you care. So I go back to what we as advisors many times do. We want to throw up our knowledge because we spend so much time. We spend so much money. We got our education. And so we want to tell them how smart we are. But really the power is actively listening and going deeper with clients and fostering that emotional trust.
I think it's really important. And it's not only just in the accounting industry, right? But just service, everything in general. And, you know, I hit on it time and time again, but, you know, if you're looking to decommoditize and add value, there is no better way to add value than to actually know somebody and have their trust. And, you know, I mean, think about most people when they're starting out businesses. You know, your first couple of clients, they're all friends and family.
Yeah, right.
You know, someone that trusts you already comes with you.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had probably close to 30,000 clients over the entire 10 years of the company. And I remember client number one.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a relationship from my previous company. So I technically... to be fair, he was going to leave them. And that was when I mentioned that I was doing something else. But like, I know his ringtone, his callback, like everything about this person. And, you know, we had more of a relationship than just Andrew's the dude that fixed my monitor.
Yeah.
At one time.
Yeah.
Right. But digging deeper into that, and he's, I think he's still a client today.
Yeah.
I think he is still a client today. I was looking at the date, and for some reason, I was like, like that
you
would
still
cheat.
Have
the,
you still have that relationship, Andrew.
Yeah.
Hopefully, right? He's not listening to that. To the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Start.
Hold on. Let me plug my computer. 1 second. Sorry, Mary. You know, cut away on the, you edit away on this one, Mary. So that was your first client, and he's still a client of yours, Andrew.
Yeah, 10 years later.
All right.
Yeah.
That's the power of relationships. But I talk about relationships in the sense, not just relationships with your clients, but relationships with your colleagues. As we mentioned, I don't know if it was on this podcast or the one we just did on my podcast. I referenced John Garrett at the Bridging the Gap conference, and he talked about how 40 seconds of authentic communication with an employee can drastically change that well-being. So it's really taking that time to have that human interaction with people that can make their day. And I think in today's digital world where things get crazy, well, how do we do that in a hybrid sitting room? I mean, how do we do that in Zoom? I think it's so important is showing how much we care.
Yeah. And back on, she had mentioned a little earlier about the advisors and then wanting to show everyone like how much you know. And it's a John Maxwell quote, I believe, but It's nobody cares how much you know until mm-hmm. they know how much you care.
Yeah.
And pouring into the relationship and really getting to know people is really going to make so much difference. And even, I mean, things happen in business where things don't go perfect 100% right. as you wanted to. And the retention tool of the relationship also plays. So, I mean, there's so many things that not just like, well, it feels good and people enjoy having human connection interaction, but there is a soft ROI on it as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that Vanguard study that I'll go back to, they said that increasing your emotional intelligence will lead to greater retention, more referrals, and turn higher revenue.
Can't be.
And I think it's, yeah, I think it's the accounting professional that in the wealth advisors too, the more and more we can lean into that emotional side of advice and really having that human to human interaction, it's just a better way to work with clients, and it's more rewarding to you. And this goes back to, I think we had a conversation about Intuit and the AI tool. You know, people want to work with someone who has a shared human experience, and it looks like Intuit is going to take away a lot of that 1040 work with maybe their AI tool, but like that work was going to be going away anyways. So how do we provide more high valued services and help people live the life that they want, help them meet their goals and their aspirations? I think that's what's so important here in advisement.
Yeah. So it kind of is forcing the people that have just been kind of hanging on to that simple 1040 compliance work. Well, this is just what I've always done, and kind of, you know, separating the ones that can really provide those higher value services, which, I mean, you know, it's like every person has been preaching for a long time about, yeah. you know, provide advisory and, you know, more value to your clients, more revenue. Don't just be a compliance number cruncher. And, right. you know, that's really what all it's about. And Roy, I want to be conscious of your time. I think we literally could go forever. I mean, at Bridging the Gap, forever. I think we went forever. And then like the last like 2 hours, we've been going forever.
Yeah. So. I'll say it again. I said it on my podcast, Andrew, that was the best dinner I've ever had at a conference. Me, you, Geraldine Carter, Seth Feinberg, and Dan Hood. That was quite, and Geraldine not knowing how to use ChatGPT. And Andrew, tell the audience what you said to her.
Jason Statz literally had done an episode on his podcast of, he's like, let's just take an example. Geraldine Carter, how could she use AI in her company? He's like, well, she could do this, that, and the other. And he did like an entire breakdown as like, as just, here's an example of how anyone could use AI. And then Geraldine Carter, unbeknownst to her that this episode existed about her, she was like, how could I use AI for what I do? And it's like, okay.
But here's a plug for Geraldine though. She is so good. She's been so successful. I love what she's doing, her coaching program. So I want to shout out to Geraldine. She is an absolute rock star in the space and helping clients get down to 25 hours. I think her thing is gets down to 25 hours a work week. So she's brilliant. So I want to give her credit because she's not using ChatGPT and she's been so successful up until this time.
Or, and this will play into that, and we're just getting so meta on this. Or she's great with ChatGPT, pretending that she's not, so that we all don't think she's using it, like the other story that Roy,
like the other story that
had a girlfriend. I had a girlfriend once upon a time that had us all convinced she was the worst liar on earth, and jokes on me, she had one of the best lies of all time. We'll have like hidden shows.
Yeah, you should have a subscription. Yeah, Patreon story on Andrew's dating life.
Yeah,
I would pay money for that, Andrew.
It was a good story.
It was an excellent story. I said, talk about it to this day.
It is to this day. It was like 2 weeks every day.
Yeah, right.
All right, Rory, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people find more about you?
All right, buddy. I appreciate you having me on. You can go to arrootfamilyops.com or wealthmanagement4.com, which is our coaching program. I do have a book coming out called The Holistic Guide to Wealth Management for Accounting Professionals. I have authors like Seth Feinberg, Blake Oliver, Randy Johnson, a number of luminaries from the wealth management side. So I got a collaboration of excellent contributors here to really bring a future-facing model to the accounting profession. And that book, you can sign up or get news on it at advisoror.com. That's advisoror.com.
Awesome. Rory, thank you so much for being on the show. I had a blast, and we'll probably be seeing him again in another episode.
We'll do it again. Thanks, buddy.
That was fine. Bye. Great. Yeah. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Tech Talk for Accountants show. I hope you enjoyed today's guest. And remember, you can go to tech4accountants.net/podcast to book a complimentary IT audit conducted by a technician certified by the AICPA in cybersecurity. Again, that's tech4accountants.net/podcast.